go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to Moms Talk Autism. Today we have a community member on with us, and we'll tell you more about that in just a sec.
When you become a mom, you never imagine your child getting an autism diagnosis. It feels like your dreams have shattered, like a framed photograph falling off your mantle, exploding into a thousand pieces. But instead of trying to glue those pieces back together, this community of moms is here to help you build a new dream, a better one. So join in the conversation as us moms talk autism.
Okay, we are back. Today it is myself, Brittany, and I've got my co-host here with me, Jean. And we have a special community member. So what happens, and we love when this happens, by the way, we start chatting with some of you who follow along on social media and listen to the podcast online. And we'll go in back and forth on DMs, and we'll be talking about whatever subject you need to talk about. And as the conversation progresses, we find that there's a story there that we can tell that we think would be good for our audience to hear, or that there would be a connection, something in the story that would be beneficial to you and to us, because we're gaining benefit from listening to these stories as well. And that is how our guest came to be today. Katie and started chatting with, I think she started chatting with Jean first, right?
Correct.
And we've quickly found the conversation and Katie's story to be really amazing and something that we wanted all of you to hear. So welcome, Katie, to the podcast.
Thank you.
And we will preface this. Katie's battling a little bit of a cold, and we're totally going to work with it. We've all been there, but she sounds very sultry today. So we're just going to go with that. So Katie, tell us a little bit about your family and where you live, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So we live in Northern Colorado, about an hour north of Johnstown. And we are one big, giant, blended family. I have two kids, two boys, from my previous relationship. Camden is 5. Lucas, who's our neuro spicy kiddo, he is 4. And then my husband has two kids from his previous marriage. Olivia is 7. And Jackson is also 5, in case you ever wanted to know what it was like to have twin boys without having twins. And then
awesome, let's do it.
We got our sweet spicy little baby girl from the two of us. Her name is Logan, and she will be 2 next month, and she runs the show without a doubt.
That's how it usually goes, isn't it? That baby's in charge. Yeah, awesome. Okay, so we've got 5 kids.
Yep.
And Colorado, awesome. Okay. And tell us a little bit about Lucas and how his diagnosis and the process of when you maybe noticed that maybe you needed to get some things looked at for
Definitely.
Him.
Definitely. So I had Lucas just a week premature due to preeclampsia. At 36 mm-hmm. weeks, he was just the teeniest, tiniest, perfect little old man looking baby. And I'd say at about a month old, which I know sounds so crazy early, I just knew. Not necessarily that anything was wrong, but that Lucas just had something, some little spark to him, to his little personality. And for a long time, I'm like, oh my goodness, he's so sweet. oh my goodness, he's so funny. Until, which is all still true, he's all those things. And yeah, it was at his 3-month appointment with his pediatrician where he mentioned, you know, I think we should have him evaluated for the early intervention services. And as long as he scores over a 30% delay, then he'll qualify for those things. And me, at the time being a single mom, I'm kind of like, oh my gosh, what are you talking about? Like, I wasn't even noticing that he wasn't hitting milestones. We had him evaluated and he did score over a 50% delay in his gross motor skills. And so that's where we started with physical therapy. And we did continue physical therapy all the way until he was almost 2. And let's say it was about 9 months old in a session with his physical therapist when I kind of casually mentioned, I said, you know, he's not putting anything in his mouth. He's not, and that includes food. He's not feeding himself. He's not holding his own bottle. He's nothing. There was nothing near his mouth. And I'm looking at my nephew, who is only 4 days younger than Lucas. Like, they are just wildly different babies, which, you know, all babies can be different, but it was quite drastic, the difference in their gross motor and fine motor skills. And so we were able to get approved for occupational therapy. Unfortunately, it was in the peak of COVID. And
Of course it was.
And had to be telehealth, which I am not an occupational therapist. And it was the most awkward thing sitting with my baby, trying to do things to help him in OT. And it was it just did not work out. So we did stop doing OT for a little while. And then kind of after we stopped physical therapy, it was kind of a constant conversation with his pediatrician. And I said, you know, what about autism? Like, I'm just kind of learning a little bit about it. I feel like he's met some of those signs and symptoms that you might see really early on. And
so you brought it up first.
I did. Yeah. And I kind of tend to be hyper aware of what my kids are doing.
Yes.
And sure. And of course I had my nephew in comparison. That's so different. And I had my sister. She's kind of like, well, do you think, and why does he do this? And everybody just knew that Lucas had that. He just had that special personality trait. I don't even know how to explain it. And it truly is one of my favorite things about him. And so his pediatrician said, my gut's not telling me autism, but let's do the referral for speech therapy, because he's 2 years old and had maybe 5 words. And he would also lose words if he gained any other ones. So at any given time, he had a set of 5 words and that was it. And so we get into speech therapy and his language blossoms. It was honestly amazing how he went from almost completely non-speaking at 2, which is still super early, to saying comprehensible, you know, 3 and 4 word sentences when he was about 2.5 years old. So he graduated from speech therapy, which was phenomenal. And it was with the help of his speech therapist that I went back to his pediatrician and I said, I want to fill out the MCHET. So he kind of reluctantly gives me the MCHET. Lucas scores borderline. And he says, I still don't think he has autism, but I'll send the referral for evaluation.
Good for you being a squeaky wheel.
It was tough. It was tough for sure.
Yeah, it's hard.
And so we go through this 2-month-long process. It's like an hour once a week for him to go through this evaluation process. And in the end, they say, well, he scored borderline, but here's your diagnosis. And I talked to his speech therapist and I'm like, well, they suggested ABA. And his speech therapist says, ABA is so intense, I don't think that would be right for Lucas. Me being so young and really uneducated about everything, I just kind of left it at that. Like, we had this diagnosis and they did suggest ABA. And then I went a whole year just not doing anything. Because at that point, I kind of told myself, Lucas is healthy and happy. And there's not any current you know, major problems, so to say, in our lifestyle. And he's just that. He's happy and healthy. And so that's where we left it. And it was a year later, almost exactly, to when we had received his diagnosis. And I said, you know, I just think I want to talk to the doctor who diagnosed him. So I set up an appointment and I'm like, I think I just left kind of confused. Like, does he have autism or does he not? And do I need to be looking at something else? And he pulled up this score sheet. And what I found out was he had scored borderline for moderate to severe, but had scored at the top of the range for mild to moderate. He was right on that line.
That would have been very helpful information the previous year.
Yes.
Mr. Doctor, who I'm assuming it was a Mr.
It was.
Maybe I shouldn't make assumptions, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so
we'll leave it at that.
And then he said, well, did you start ABA? And I said, well, his speech therapist didn't think it would be good for him. This guy was kind of like, I don't know who she thinks she is, but she's a speech therapist, not an autism specialist. And I still would recommend ABA because in that year we had seen quite a bit of increase in symptoms and behaviors relating to autism. And so that's how we got into ABA. And that's where we are now. And he's gained so many skills. I'm so, so proud of him.
That's awesome. So I have some questions about your ABA. Because everywhere ABA is done differently everywhere, just to kind of depending on, you know, your area, your insurance, all sorts of stuff. And we'll get into more of that here in a minute. But as far as your ABA goes, did you do it in a clinic? Did you do it at home? How many hours did you start off with? How did he react to it? You know, give me some more info about
that. Yeah, so our ABA is in center, and the closest location is about 30 minutes from our house. And so we drove. He had about a 3-hour-long evaluation, and then we had a meeting afterwards, and they said, you know, here's where he's at. They were kind of going back and forth between, do we do, like, his max necessity at 30 hours a week, or do we push it down to 25? And we did land on 25 hours a week, which for Lucas just ended up being 5 hours, 5 days a week is how we split it up for him. Because I did feel like he was just
part-time job.
He was just too little to be there for a full 8-hour day. And to my surprise, he did fantastic. Because that whole year kind of that we had gone between diagnosis and confirmed diagnosis, he had built up some really, really severe separation anxiety, specifically from me. And so I was worried that he was going to go. And even if he was okay with it at first, then he'd quickly, you know, be asking for me or crying for me. And I cannot say enough good things about the staff. And I'm so grateful that we got at the location we did. They've been phenomenal. And Lucas, you can tell when he just kind of creates a little special relationship with a specific RBT. And it's been really amazing. He loves it.
That's awesome.
And what age is he?
And so are you still at that same
clinic? Got him?
So let's see, he just turned 4. So it's just after he turned 3, because he's been there a year. So it's just after he turned 3 that we got him in to that center. And yes, we're still at the same center.
Same place. Okay. Awesome. That's great. How has the turnaround, like, have you had a lot of turnover with staff, or has it been pretty steady for you guys?
I think when we started, I kind of fell in love with his BCBA's team. And I was a little taken aback the first time that we had an RBT leave. I'm like, wait, but my son loves you. Like, you can't leave us. And that kind of became a more and more regular thing. Thankfully, I've had no problems, and I love every new one that comes onto the team. and Lucas too. He's been transitioning really, really well between staff members. So it is a higher turnaround rate than I had expected. But you know, knowing a little bit more about it, I kind of understand it takes a special person to dedicate so much of their time to working with these kiddos.
Yeah. And the way it's set up, a lot of these people who are working directly with your child, they tend to be, you know, early 20s, kind of college age. They're doing their own schooling a lot of times. And so they're, you know, with that comes semester changes and breaks from school and changes in their schedule too and their availability. And that's for better or worse, that's how it is. Jean's raising her hand.
That's one aspect for sure that plays into it. The other aspect
yes.
is ABA has turned in to an industrious machine and RBTs across yes. the board are majorly underpaid. They make not enough
Correct.
Wage. And so to have the demands that they have, working with the population that they do, and paired with whatever demands they have coinciding in tandem in their life, like their schedule if they are in college and such, or some of them also are parents as well. And this is just, you know, a way that they're being able to make a living. You tend to, I saw the same thing, Katie, and I had, It was heartbreaking to deal with. Shannon's not here. It's one of the main reasons why Shannon ended up having to take a break from ABA was because of the turnover. Because for Gracie, she needed a much more consistency in that novel person and the constant repairing that they had to do. Now, I mean, like when I say repairing, like not repair, like it's broken, like repairing off, like that's a term for those that don't know. But that constant, incessant, it wasn't moving things along. And so I point those things out because you also, what's also very, optimistic and refreshing for your son is that he's showing that he is transitioning well and he has generalized skills and he can handle that. Not all of our kiddos can. So like that is trending in a good direction, especially if and when you want to, you know, when it was time for him to be mainstreamed. But anyway, we're not in that part of the story. But anyway, that was my piece. That is what I needed to say.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. And that part of that and related is not only the staff being paid, you know, insufficiently, but then how do we as parents pay for ABA? And it varies wildly depending on where you live. Once again, what services are available, what laws are in place, and what insurance you have, all those things. Some people pay nothing for ABA and your own insurance or government funded insurance will take care of everything. Other people pay a percentage or some people pay for everything. And so I think that's kind of where your story picks up with paying for the ABA, right, mm-hmm. Katie?
So I am fortunate in that I am no longer using Medicaid since I got married in November. I'm now on my husband's employee provided insurance. But Lucas remains on Medicaid, and it was the easiest part of the process. They said, oh, he has Medicaid, everything's covered. The unfortunate part about Medicaid for other families is there are dozens of ABA centers that had to close their doors entirely across Colorado because they were smaller owned. Kind of single location places, and the Medicaid reimbursement rates were not, they just weren't enough. And so those kids were losing their services, and other kids ended up losing their services because the center closed. So I'm grateful.
Yeah. Stuff.
And I'm also grateful to have seen kind of that little inside information about how lucky we really were for that to work out the way that it did.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. So I've been fortunate as well here in California, where I live, Northern California, where ABA has been covered mostly by our insurance or fully. And we've been able to do it in home for the years that we have. We are currently not doing any ABA. And just for anyone who, I don't think we made this clear, but ABA is applied behavior analysis. It's a type of therapy that is probably one of the most mainstream therapies available for autistic, you know, individuals and kids. And there's good ABA and there's bad ABA. So, well, you know, that's a whole nother podcast episode that we've talked about before, but just keep that in mind. So, yeah. So, okay. So you're doing ABA, things are going well for Lucas. And then you wanted to get to explain a little bit about kind of where your advocacy and your kind of, you're hitting some snags.
Yeah,
what was happening?
So, I had somebody approach me, an employee of the ABA center. And I will say the ABA center that we are at is very large. They have, I want to say like 10 locations in all across mostly Southern Colorado, a couple Northern Colorado. They're in North Carolina and very heavily across Texas. So, excuse me. Thankfully, they're big enough that even if the Medicaid reimbursement rates hadn't gone up, they would have been okay, at least for now. So I had somebody approach me and she says, I need you to write a letter. And if you're comfortable with it, attach a picture of your son talking all about how ABA has impacted your family, how it's impacted your son, you know, your favorite things about it and so forth. And so we sat down and she kind of...
This was somebody in the ABA company, yep. Right? That asked you to do this?
Okay. Yeah. So their headquarters are in Austin. And so she had traveled from Austin to kind of gather a handful of parents, Medicaid parents in Colorado to write these letters. So she interviews me. She kind of types in this like template sort of a thing. And then she says, oh, by the way, we want this to be handwritten. And I'm like, oh, I'll get on it. Thanks. So we send the letters, don't hear anything. They have a budget meeting and they say, well, we hear you, we understand you, but it's going to have to wait until next year. And
what was the purpose of this letter? Explain it a little bit more. Like, why did they want you to write these letters?
It was to help show legislators kind of that personal side from the parents who are going through it. Like, our kids are on Medicaid, but that doesn't make us, you know, less than. Right? They still need these services. Please help us cover it because it's so important for our kids. And then, so kind of like a couple months go by and I don't really hear anything about it other than we'll touch on it next year. And then I have somebody reach out to me again and she says, your name was listed as an enthusiastic parent. And I kind of giggled a little. I'm like, who told you that? I mean, don't get me wrong. I am, and I'm happy to help wherever I can. It was just her wording was kind of funny.
Yeah.
And she says, okay, so I need you to draft this email by tomorrow night. And I really just, after that first letter, I just had this little spark in me, and it felt so good and to be helping and to be talking about something that I truly enjoy and that has genuinely helped my son and our family as a whole. And so I'm like, you got it. I type this big long email. I send it that same night. And then another couple of months goes by and I walked in to drop off one day and they say, Katie, they agreed to approve emergency funds to reimburse Medicaid at 100% for ABA services. And that was kind of where we left off.
That is a huge wow. Huge. Like, huge wow. That's unheard of, literally.
And was it for the entire state of Colorado or just your region?
Yep, the entire state of Colorado.
So explain a little bit more about that. So if someone is applying for Medicaid or has it and is using ABA services, and maybe the paperwork isn't done all the way, or they need... They're paying out of pocket, at least maybe at first, they can now be reimbursed.
My knowledge, Medicaid will reimburse up to 3 months back pay. So
retroactive. For ABA services.
So retroactive.
Yep, Mm-hmm. And the benchmark, it used to be at 80%. And now they've approved these emergency funds specifically for ABA therapy at 100% of the benchmark. So Medicaid is paying the same
year was that
a private insurance would pay. That was January.
What year was that, Katie?
I'm trying to think. I think it was January of 2024. So I think it was just this year, if not December of 2023.
Mm-hmm. So, when you were writing the letters to the lawmakers, did you know that you were which group of lawmakers you were targeting? So here it would be Health and Human Services and anyone that sits on that committee. Is that who you were writing, was to the Health and Human Services Committee?
So my first letter was mailed to the Joint Budget Committee, but I believe it was the Joint Budget Committee for Human Services.
Human Services. All right. So it was appropriations. So usually it'll be like there's different, each appropriations committee or whatever in any kind of lawmaking body, they're then defined by articles. And so like it would be like Article 1, Article 2, or Article 3. And I'm not saying for you to pinpoint that now. I'm saying that for our listeners. So if they're thinking about, hey, I want to advocate in that way too, here's some ways that kind of how to target that and how you're targeting those groups. Even though you responded to a call to action and you just like beautifully felt into this. But changing and being able to affect policy at a state level, you have changed lives so many. And in Texas, and when you said that the company, which you don't have to mention what the company's name is, their headquarters here in Austin, I'm wondering if they're one of the companies that is jointly working with the Autism Society and our Disability Rights Roundtable that has been advocating to increase the reimbursement rates for Medicaid here. Now, Medicaid currently wasn't until the 87th legislative session, which was 2021. That it was mandated that it would be covered, but they didn't have the rates. And I'm talking about like, you're talking about like, they're willing to cover 12%. We're talking about real low bar. That's where Texas is right now. And so why there is a prominent amount of ABA centers here in Texas, mainly obviously more in the metropolis areas, there's a lot of rural here. They're sustaining off of the private healthcare system. It's not that the Medicaid is not at all keeping it afloat. But even with this last legislative session that we had, which was in 2023, went all the way almost till the end, which is why I was curious about your timeline and the request for you to send those letters, because this is the change that we need. So to have that jump of even like 80, you were originally at 80% to actually make it all the way to 100%, that is amazing. And other states, that's already happening for sure. That 100% coverage is absolutely already happening. It is just not here. And so don't be surprised if you're asked to help advocate now in states like mine, because those stories need to be. And here's what I would also say is that this is why parent advocacy is so important when you want to change policy, because facts tell, but stories sell. And those stories are what push those lawmakers over the edge to change those policies. And so even without kind of anyone painting that canvas for you or making that roadmap, like you did that. You just responded to it and you fell right into it. And it's not over for you. Like, you change something in a big way. And if that person is tied to a company that is corporate and is across the nation, you probably will be called to action to help other parents and families do the same thing. I know that the group organization that I'm associated with has done a lot of push and participated in that advocacy to increase those Medicaid reimbursement rates. I spent a lot of time in the previous session doing that. This session I didn't, because it was all about PubEd, but I was paying attention to it. Nothing happened. No change happened, unfortunately, but it needs to happen. And I think that other states that have done that, that can model.
It's time to breathe easier this allergy season with Breathe Right Nasal Strips. With instant nasal congestion relief for up to 12 hours, you can spend your time on your terms, not on your noses. Stuffy nose from outdoor allergens? No problem. We got you. Allergy season just turned into stripping season. Instant relief from nasal congestion anytime, anywhere. Need more convincing? Click the banner below and get a free sample. Breathe right. Get your strip on. Use as directed.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Model that and is huge. And I'm only saying that to also inspire our listeners, and there's quite a bit of listeners that preside in states like mine and other states, that they're hungry and need this and they need to know how to do it. So thank you for doing that.
And I guess that's the next point. That's our next question for you is, what are you doing currently? And how can maybe others join you in your advocacy, or maybe if they don't live near you or in the same state, but they can kind of do their own thing, you know, maybe something similar where they live.
Yeah. So I think as far as, you know, other parents wanting to help or advocate or do something is to very plainly ask the question, you know, whether you're asking maybe your special ed teacher is like, what is there something I can be doing? Is there somebody I could just have a little chat with, a casual conversation? I'm of the opinion that talking is good. Start the conversation, because you never know where it might take you. It might end quickly, and that's that. And then you move on to your next conversation. But as long as you're building solid communication with the people around you, I think those doors start showing up. They start opening, and then it's kind of up to you where you want to take it.
Right. It's true. It's interesting how those conversations, even starting with a therapist or a teacher or another mom at school pickup or wherever that is, can then snowball into these opportunities to speak to a larger audience. That certainly is the case for us and our little our little Moms Talk Autism group that we started on social media, even and look where we are now, and we have many, many more steps and more things that we want to do. This isn't the end game for us, although we love where we are right now talking with all of you and having these conversations. But it's really, really important to continue to be curious, continue to have those conversations. When these doors open, even if it's not, you're not exactly sure what it is, ask more questions, find out, write that letter, talk to that supervisor, that district, you know, whatever that person is, and see if there's opportunities. And you don't have to take all of them either. That can be super overwhelming, right? Like, you're still in charge of your kid. You're still, you have five children. You're still doing ABA therapy 25 hours a week. Like, I mean, no one's expecting you to take it all on. But if you have that drive and that ability to contribute, that's really, really important. And we commend you for that. So I was reading we had some notes. We've been able to chat with Katie, you know, beforehand, and we always do Zoom calls. And you talked about how you would love to be able to speak to other people, like you mentioned medical students and nurses and, you know, about autism in general. Like, tell me a little bit about that and kind of where you see your advocacy going in the future.
Okay. This question just gets me so giddy and so excited. As a teenager in high school, all my friends are like, oh, I'm going to college for this. This is the career I want for my life. And I had no idea what I wanted to do. I did a year of college and then I stopped and I had kids young and I had just been working. And I have the ability to be a stay-at-home parent at the moment. But I dipped my toe in this advocacy and it just kind of set my little soul on fire. And, you know, I've had some unfortunate comments made both by family members, by doctors. And I actually start school next month. I'm going to get my bachelor's in psychology. And the program I found actually offers a bachelor's in psychology specializing in applied behavior analysis. So I will be graduating.
Oh, that's new.
Yeah.
That's
I will
cool.
be graduating as a BCABA, so a board certified assistant behavior analyst. I don't have any desire to be a BCBA personally. But what's super cool about that is it will give me the opportunity to work hands-on with kids and adults with autism as part of that licensure. And then I'm going to go on to become a certified autism specialist. And with that education and those certificates and licenses, I have big, big plans. I want to talk to med students, nursing students, non-specialized pediatricians, non-specialized doctors in any field. That could be dentists, that could be eye doctors, you name it. I want to talk to them. And I want to talk to them specifically about the kind of that less impactful end of the spectrum. Profound autism is so important and so fascinating. And I plan to talk about all that as well. But my experiences are telling me that when kids don't display those, you know, huge markers, that when you walk into a room and you see them, you would know they have a disability. They tend to be like, oh, well, it's whatever. Oh, well, he makes eye contact. You know, oh, he has a social smile.
Dismissive.
Right, right. And yeah. That's what I really, really want to target. But at the end of the day, even if that doesn't end up being the target, I want to educate and I want to advocate all about autism. And I want to talk to the people mm-hmm. whose education skims over it, so that they're more prepared, so that they're more ready and can be more inclusive in really day-to-day life. And so while I'm waiting on this degree, which will take a few years, I'm in communication with a couple of my local churches that have moms groups. And I just want to chat. I want to talk about mm-hmm. our kids. I want to talk about Lucas. I want to talk about little things that they could do, that they could teach their kids, to teach that inclusion versus acceptance piece. We have our local library has this big play space and they do story time and they have guest speakers. You know, I want to talk anywhere I can talk without having a degree, so that when I have my degree, I can just take it so much further.
That's amazing. Another area, and this touches my life, what has been going on, I have a brother in law enforcement, and he is currently part of a semester, essentially, like 4 months training program that he's doing within the state that he lives, but not in the area, not in his specific county where he is part of the deputy sheriff county. And he mentioned that they had, I don't know if it was a day or a couple of days of developmental delay training with the community. And they had another law enforcement instructor who had children with, I believe it was autism, come and speak to them about, you know, certain scenarios where police officers could be, you know, interacting with people with autism or other, you know, mental health issues in general, but also, you know, developmental delays. And I found that that's great. I'm so glad that they did that. That's like a drop in the bucket. Like, we need to have so much more. I think it is the doctors, it is the teachers, it is the dentist, the eye doctors, these specialists that our children are going to be seeing too, that maybe don't have some of that more specialized training to help kids, adults, teenagers with autism or other delays that are developmental, you know, delays that need maybe some extra support. Police officers, you know, ER staff, fire, rescue, any of those areas, they need that too. And I think that's just such a worthy avenue to kind of focus your advocacy, and a place where maybe we all need to be looking at that a little bit closer. Because I don't know. I think a lot of parents, myself included, having to take our kids to places or be confronted in emergency situations where they'll be interacting with strangers who maybe don't have experience or don't know, don't understand. It's really scary, and it's really, can cause a lot of anxiety for us knowing if they're going to be taken care of properly or appropriately. So
I have a couple things I wanted to add, because one of the things why I was so drawn to Katie is I felt like we are kindred spirits and our devotion, and like, I felt your drive was very similar to mine in advocacy, and now knowing also what your long-term vision is, which I didn't know. But if you've heard before on the podcast, I've talked about what I do with Texas Parent to Parent. You have a parent to parent in Colorado. Don't know if you know that or not. The medical training program I do through Texas Parent to Parent is a state-funded grant for universities for first and second year medical residents. And that's what I do. I get on and do trainings with them. I tell my story about being a medical mom and what our journey has been, the highs and lows, the wins, the losses. And so it is a pebble that drops that obviously goes much further than that, because they go on, whether they stay in this state or they go to another state, that experience, they don't get to have that one-on-one experience that in depth with any of the families they're going to encounter, but it's going to give them a lens that they otherwise didn't have in that exposure. And every opportunity that we get to have, like what you said, anyone that skims, anyone that intersects with this population is so important to be having those conversations. My mentor, who's extremely very educated. So I'm telling you this, I don't have all those letters behind my name, and I'm doing that. You could approach parent to parent. You could look to see if they have any programs similar to that and say, hey, the parent to parent chapter in Texas is doing this. Can we look for applying for a similar grant program where we are doing that same thing? Because that grant program covers, now they're currently not doing it, but it does cover training. We could do those with nurses. We could do that with first responders. It's not limited to just first and second year medical residents. However, that is the prominent population in which we are doing those presentations with right now. But that's not what it was, especially for COVID. It kind of covered the whole gamut, but it's actually distilled down to this just for now. However, I'm only saying that is, still do that because I want to. Trust me, I want to have all the letters behind my name too, especially with all of the lanes of advocacy that I'm in, being in education. But you still can do those things because you've already seen that being a mom is more than enough. And moms make change. Moms make change. Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Go back to that. That's all legislative efforts because of moms being collectively organized and getting stuff done. And that's what, whether we want to or not as a podcast, like indirectly, we are infecting that kind of change to into the world. it is moms that get things done. So don't sell yourself short why you can still do those things. I think that definitely still those local community outreach, that's huge. Don't stop doing that. Tosh does that plenty. Brittany does that. And then I wanted to tackle, you know, and I'll help if there's anything I can do to like bridge information that you may need from our chapter if you approach your, and if Texas Parent to Parent isn't, there's also Family Voices. There's the ARC. There's many ARC chapters in each state, and Easter Seals. A lot of those advocacy groups, you'll have like,
yeah,
peer-to-peer support networking kind of opportunities where maybe if parent to parent doesn't want to, a Colorado doesn't want to take that on, you could say, I feel very strongly about X and advocate for that. So that could totally be your jam, like completely be your jam to introduce that.
I love that. Like we need to, yeah, if someone really wants maybe a list or would like to contact us about that, please email us at hello@moms.autism and we can maybe give you a little bit of a list to start with in your state or your area of some of these advocacy groups that you could get involved in. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Katie, we want to give you a chance. We got to wrap things up here, but I wanted to give you a chance. If there's anything you would like to say to other moms, like in your position or that, or maybe just starting out or wanting to get involved, maybe they've been going for a little while and want to get involved in some of these larger groups, what would be your advice to them?
Oh, there's so many things I could say. but really, I just think I want to go back to my initial comment and say, talk. Just talk. I spent so much of my life silencing myself. Try not to cry. Because people in my life, people around me made me feel, I shouldn't place blame. As a result of some of the people around me, I felt less worthy, less of a mom, less of a person. And recently, kind of along with this little advocacy piece, I just decided to start talking, and I've had multiple other moms of teeny tiny little ones, maybe just starting the diagnosis process, people I went to high school with whose children also have autism. They send me a message on Facebook and they say, I just wanted to say thank you because your posts are so comforting and they're so supportive because I'm still learning. I'm still so new to it. But I've learned that advocating for myself and my kids can indirectly help so many other people. And just that is enough to tell me I need to keep going. I used to be so afraid of posting on social media because people are like, oh, they just want attention. Oh, they just want comments or likes or whatever, right? But I've been talking about accommodations for Lucas. We just got him a pair of noise canceling headphones and I avoided it for the longest time because I was like, people are going to think I'm enabling him to choose when to listen and not listen. But then I saw how it affected him and his body language was immediately more relaxed. He's content. We're having less tantrums, just those little spurts that we're able to use that as a tool. And I posted about it. And I had so many people say, you're such a good mom. Keep going. And people, you know, people message me individually. Thank you so much for sharing it. It really is so supportive. And so I say, just talk. You can get so far by just talking. And it's honestly, it's incredible. And I get something out of it. Like I feel so good for helping. And I just love it. I love it so much. And I cannot wait to talk to as many people as possible.
That's why we love to do it too. Yeah, that's why we do it too. It's lovely to be, you know, complimented and tell how great you are. And that's important. Like, and I encourage other parents to do that. If you're seeing something really good on a social media account that you feel is really helping you, comment and let them know because we need that encouragement too. But that interaction, that's how things start. It's just something small. And it really can make a big, big difference.
It's so contagious.
Thank you so much for being on today. Yeah.
It's so contagious. Oh, it's like inclusion. Like when Bree was talking about how like once you get a taste of it, it's contagious and you can spread it. And I just feel that even in this conversation today that I hope that transcends into our listeners' ears and hearts and minds. Like, we are literally just, they're sparking something inside of them. Because I can tell you from when Tosh did my interview, my DMs blew up, and there was a whole population of people that, even in our state, that I had no contact with, that all of a sudden, like, okay, they're like, how do I do this? You've like, and that's what's like, I can't wait to hear like how this is gonna shape that even more for you. You even having this conversation today, like,
we should do a check in a little bit with
say,
you.
Like, you gave me so many ideas.
Yeah,
I want to go like
too.
Research all these other avenues now that I can do, you know, before I have my degree.
Yeah, like, there's so much.
I'm so excited.
Exactly.
And FYI,
that's awesome.
Those things can kind of help give you scholarships and grants to your degree. If just so you know,
pay for.
Yeah.
If you if you're a part of those groups, because I know one organization, just being a trustee, there's a possibility for that. So you just never know where life is going to take you. Like, I am seriously so excited. And I'm so excited that we had this conversation today, that you came on, and that you're part of this community, because I really think you will continue to be a resource for everyone in our community too. Like, it's going to be so exciting to see you grow as an advocate.
Thank you so much. That really means a lot.
So speaking of community, Katie, how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah. Let's see. I don't even know my Instagram handle these days. My Instagram handle is just Katie Bunyan _. That's it. Haven't changed my last name on there yet. So that's probably, I'm honestly not super, super active on social media, but I'm getting so many ideas, I just might start to be. So
maybe check your DMs every once in a while. Yeah, we'll make sure and put that in our show notes, so people, if they want to get a hold of you and have a chat, they can contact you. So that's okay. No. You've made it this far. I'm really proud of you with your poor little voice. We will end really quick. We haven't done one in a while, and I really want to today, but we like to do peak of the weeks. So what we do for a peak of the week is we just talk about something good that happened to us this week. That could be something personal. It can be autism related. It can be something with your kid. It could be something completely just with you, something funny you saw, whatever, like just something that brought you a little bit of joy. And Jean, do you have anything right now, or do you want me to go first?
No, I do. It happened last night.
Awesome.
I took both kids to the movies, me and my single mom self. It's one of Ori's happy places, and he's been waiting for the release of the Kung Fu Panda 4 movie. And that series has really grown up with him. It has been a staple. It's been a benchmark in even his like development of me noticing him from the time of where he was completely non-speaking until speech was, you know, inspired, and watching even himself develop socially and emotionally. Kung Fu Panda actually had a huge partake in that, because one of the first times we even saw him cry was watching Kung Fu Panda 2, right? And so, like, when I tell you, like, because that mom died, you know, in these darn Disney movies, and that's a DreamWorks movie, but all those movies where the parents die, I swear, my child, who you mentioned, Katie, your child had separation anxiety. Rory had severe separation anxiety. Brittany knows, and she didn't get to witness it like in person firsthand, but she got to hear it and me talk about it all the time. Until 2 years ago, I couldn't even be in a separate room from him. Now I could when he did go to ABA, but that was the only exception. And that was like a miracle that that happened. But to see that, even him watch how I think it's given him even coping skills to see, okay, well, this is now Poe dealing with, you know, well, I have two dads active in my life. Like, I don't want to, anyone that knows the storyline, I'm not digging deep into
Kung Fu Panda.
But like, it is really amazing to see him to grow with this movie and be excited. So last night he calls his dad on the iPad on the way home, because most of us were separated, his dad asked him, well, what's your favorite one so far, Rory? 1, 2, 3. He goes, 4. So he says 4 is his favorite now. And when we were leaving, and if you don't know this, if anyone is a Tenacious D fan, Tenacious D released a song.
Oh, me, totally.
They released a cover to Baby Hit Me One More Time. And now I know why they released it, because it's at the end of the movie. So we take McKenna to the bathroom, and I wait in outside of the bathroom with Rory. Rory is belting out Baby Hit Me One More Time, and we listen to it the whole way home. I am like totally in my glory. I am so happy. My kid is like, he's been a pop culture fiend since the time. Like, that was like one of his repetitive behaviors. Like, he's been drawn to everything in pop culture. My kid didn't care about the Britney Spears version ever, but the Tenacious D Kung Fu Panda version that is released is now going to make the Rory Mayer playlist. You don't know how amazing I think that
is.
Oh
my gosh.
It was so amazing.
Jack Black is, you know, bringing us all together.
He's a treasure.
I love it.
He's a treasure. He is a treasure.
He's a treasure. Katie, what is your peak of the week?
So we were given the opportunity through Lucas's ABA Center. They were giving away 50 tickets to the Nuggets game. And on April, ooh, on nice. April 6th for Autism Acceptance Night. And as soon as I saw the email, I filled out the form. And so, and we did, we were able to get 3 tickets. So me, my husband, and Lucas are all going to attend this Nuggets game, which I don't care about sports, but I knew that Lucas would have a lot of fun. And my husband works a ridiculous amount of hours right now. And so I think it's just going to be really nice, really special to get that one-on-one time, not just with me, but with Daddy as well. Lucas was so teeny tiny when I met my husband. He's just Daddy, always has been. And so I'm super excited to see how he does. I don't know that he's ever been in such a loud, noisy environment, but we'll see how he does. And I'm excited to honestly even get the opportunity. I might get to talk to some people. Be like, hey, here's Lucas. This is autism. Yeah. We're awesome. And I'm really excited.
So, bring those headphones. Yeah. Let's do this. Yeah. Awesome. Oh, I hope it goes really well. That's amazing. Well, I'll just kind of talk about the same, go in the same thread here. And so my husband and I's first date ever, our first official date, was to see Tenacious D and Weezer in concert. And we were in the mosh pit, and we had a blast. It was so much fun. And they are coming. Doug just told me last night that they are doing a Weezer is doing a tour, and they're coming to my area here in Northern California in Sacramento, and they're doing the entire Blue album again. They're going to be in Austin too, Gene. And they are playing all the classic hits, and we're like, we absolutely have to go, right? This is like 23 years later. We're going to go back and see them. We've seen them again since then, but they're doing like the classics, right? Of the songs that we listened to when we were these young, sweet little college kids in the mosh pit together. So we're going to go do that. And we're excited. We're trying to get some friends to come with us too. So
is anyway, Tenacious D opening go on a date for them again?
Everybody.
Is Tenacious D opening?
They're not. That's the only thing that's, yeah, they're not. I wish. But, you know, maybe things will change. I will definitely go see Tenacious D again, too, if I ever get a chance.
Oh, my
God. It's quite the experience.
It is. I have so many memories of just even, like, when Jack Black, you know, when that became, like, a thing where they became popular. Just,
yeah,
you know, his initial covers. I mean, it is – he's amazing. And it brings so much joy. Like, and imagining you in a mosh pit too also brings a lot of joy.
it's not a very often experience. Yeah, that was, yeah, let me say, my mom was a little concerned. But we made it through and it was great. Anyway, thank you so much for being here, everyone, today. Mm-hmm. We love talking with you. We love talking to our community members. If you think your story, you'd like to come on the podcast like this and talk just like Katie has and tell us your story, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at hello@momstalkautism. You can follow us on Instagram @momstalkautism. And we have our website, momstalkautism.com. So tell a friend, spread the word, give us a review, and we will see you next time. Bye.
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 It's time to breathe easier this allergy season with Breathe Right Nasal Strips. With instant nasal congestion relief for up to 12 hours, you can spend your time on your terms, not on your noses. Stuffy nose from outdoor allergens? No problem. We got you. Allergy season just turned into stripping season. Instant relief from nasal congestion anytime, anywhere. Need more convincing? Click the banner below and get a free sample. Breathe Right. Get your strip on. Use as directed.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.